Porter, 42, a Royal resident who was homeless for 4 years before qualifying for supplemental security income that pays the $345 a month for her hotel room. I just can't go back out there on the streets. For more than 60 years, single-room occupancy hotels have rented beds to single men and women, some physically disabled, others mentally ill, and nearly all poor. Many of the residents of the Royal or other single-room occupancy hotels, SROs, seek haven in the establishments because they charge no move-in deposits and require no background checks. But the trade-off often is poorly run and badly maintained buildings, according to city officials. Ron O'Connor, head of the city's Housing and Dangerous Buildings Unit, said his office has begun inspecting all such hotels in the city, hoping to make them safer. The city's actions come in the wake of the County Board of Supervisors' adoption of a strict new housing policy designed to erase some of the worst eyesores in the unincorporated area. The county adopted guidelines to protect tenants, after a controversial raid by a task force at the Chateau Lange apartments in November. According to city ordinances, if a building is shuttered for code violations, the owner must pay tenants' relocation costs. In a housing code enforcement action taken by the county, the owner of a condemned apartment complex, the Chateau Lange, had already filed for bankruptcy on the property, so the county picked up the initial relocation costs, then placed a lien on the property, seeking reimbursement. Beverly Fritz Brown, Director of Housing Development for the Sacramento Housing and Redevelopment Agency, said a similar protocol could be followed if the Royal is condemned. If the Royal Hotel is condemned, O'Connor said a decision on whether to shutter the Royal could come as early as next week after he receives a final report from engineers on the condition of the building. If it's deemed uninhabitable, it could be closed immediately or within the next 30 days. The whole building is sagging, said O'Connor. The walls have sagged so much, there are 2 and 3 inch gaps over the doors. Some of the others are well maintained, O'Connor said. You get the whole gamut. But according to O'Connor, the Royal has such problems as extensive water damage, poor plumbing. If engineers deem it dangerous, the building could be shuttered forever or until the owner makes repairs. Sounds a bit like our Campbell Street folks back in 1995. Campbell Street was the home of Free Radio Santa Cruz for a period of time. It was also the home for a dozen folks who lived there, and it was run by slumlords Forrest and Donna Moore, who, rather than fix it up or repair it or deal with it after it was earthquake damaged, simply milked it for more money and then demolished it without paying the relocation fees they were obliged to do under the law. And they were finally forced to do that by a judge, and now, of course, they've gone to the Planning Commission seeking to build another structure. Not quite sure if it's on Campbell Street or somewhere else. We were going to follow that last week, but our eye on the Moors, Skidmark Bob, apparently was, he's got a number of jobs he has to hold down, as well as his primary job as father, and he just wasn't able to make it to that hearing last week. If anybody has any news on what happened to the Moors, I'd love to hear from you. And unfortunately, I think the phone is really in difficult shape here. We got the phone to work, so we now have an ingoing and outgoing call, but we cannot put it on the air, so our wiring is a little bit screwed. We continue here to fight on, however, at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, a twice-weekly show, this one to run till 1:30 today. And I'm reading a story from Sacramento, the Sacramento Bee, about the destruction of SROs, single-room occupancy hotels, one of the few refuges left for folks who are poor and homeless, one of the few chances for homeless people to get off the streets. And the idea is that they're going after it for building codes, and they're going after it because of habitability problems. Yeah, but the real thing is, it sounds like gentrification and eyesore is really the key word here. The Royal Hotel, owned by Ron Henry, who declined to comment, sits on a block with the Hard Rock Cafe and Union Bank of California serving as bookends. Despite the icons of commerce, a glass-towered bank and a gigantic twirling guitar, the block offers 2 liquor stores, a padlock card room, an electronic store specializing in state-of-the-art pagers, and another sad-looking SRO. Waiting for a decision by the city on the fate of the Royal has been emotionally taxing for some of the 45 people still sleeping in the building's 85 rooms. Some have moved across the street to the Hotel Marshall, Others are working with homeless advocates to find replacement housing. Still others seem nonplussed, muttering to themselves. John Foley of Lowe's and Fish's said most of the affordable housing for the SRO population has been taken. Some of the folks will end up on the streets and we'll have to figure out how to get them inside again, Foley said, who added that there are only about 900 SRO rooms in the city. Fritz Brown said the city and SHRO are shifting policies on SROs, blocking the opening of such hotels while trying to find small apartments for the poor. Officials of SHRA are working with social work students at California State University, Sacramento, to survey the residents of SROs to determine their social service, transportation, and other needs. And again, the key factor here is when you move into an apartment, you have to put down first and last and give references. When you move to a hotel room, you don't need to do any of that. It's considerably different, gives you much more freedom. You're much more likely to be able to do it if you're on the edge of homelessness. That's a story from the Sacramento Bee. City cracks down on low-rent hotels, published July 8th. Want Sex in the Morning from the album of the same name by Uncle Banzai. That's a group you'll hear me frequently play here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I love it. Well, I was roaming the internet the other day, as I do occasionally with my primitive equipment, And I ran across an interesting article on Costa Mesa, California, which is an area down in Southern California. I've been traveling around about 3 or 4 weeks ago to different cities in Southern California, including San Diego, Buena Park, Santa Monica, kind of checking in on homeless rights activities in different places. And Costa Mesa, I'd missed, in fact, I never heard of it. And apparently Costa Mesa has a soup kitchen, which the city had decided to cut off because they didn't like the homeless people hanging out there. So I gave a call, and this is the result.
Someone can assist
you, please. Yes, Lee, my name is Robert, and I work with a homeless newspaper called Street Spirit.
Uh-huh.
And I'm interested in learning some more about what's been happening with the soup kitchen Someone Cares. I ran across an article, I guess it was in the LA Times, from April, where you were experiencing some pressure from council members and some neighbors.
Everything's going fine now.
Well, that's great. I'm wondering if you'd mind if I did an interview with you about that.
Just a minute now, I'll ask.
Okay.
And who are you with?
I'm with Street Spirit, which is a San Francisco homeless newspaper.
Okay, just a moment.
Merle?
Well.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk to him either. Is he available?
It's a lady.
I'm sorry.
Is here.
But
she can't hear too good over the phone.
Oh dear.
There's a chance of you interviewing her in person.
Well, my problem is I'm like 400 miles away.
Oh, you're in San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, see if she can hear me. If she can't, then perhaps I could do it through you.
She said I could talk to you.
Okay. And I guess you could ask her any questions that you might have. What's your name?
Lee.
And what's your full name?
Lee Conley.
And Lee, how long have you been with the Someone Cares Soup Kitchen?
5 years.
And can you describe for me the problem that came up earlier this year?
Well, if you know anything about a soup kitchen, everybody knows that we need one, but they don't want it in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the trouble was.
Well, according to this LA Times article I read, I guess a city council member tried to cut off a $5,000, actually they did cut off a...
They cut off $10,000.
$10,000. And how long have you been receiving that appropriation from the city?
Probably 10 years.
And what kind of an organization are you? Are you a religious organization or...
Nonprofit.
Nonprofit?
Uh-huh.
And who formed your organization?
Merle Adelberg.
And when did that happen?
And that happened 12 years ago in June.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of services does Someone Cares provide?
We have a very nutritious, balanced meal.
Mm-hmm.
One meal a day, we serve from 1 to 4.
Mm-hmm. And how many people use your services?
We service, depending on the time of the week or the time of the month, we go up to as high as 250 a day.
Uh-huh. And Costa Mesa, where is that located exactly? What are the cities around you?
We're Newport.
I'm kind of a Northern California boy. I don't know much about Southern California. Are you near Buena Park?
No.
Okay. You're near Newport?
Yes.
And what other cities?
Newport and Santa Ana.
Uh-huh, Santa Ana.
And Fountain Valley.
And what is the main, business of Costa Mesa? What do folks mainly do there? Is it like a suburban bedroom community?
It's just like Oakland. Oakland, Richmond, San Pablo, they're just one little town after another.
Uh-huh. What kind of jobs do people mostly have, you know?
Whatever they can get. There isn't any,
Is there any industry or any manufacturing, or is it agriculture?
Wait a minute. Is there any industry around here? Industry? I'm a bachelor. A computer. He says there's a computer industry here.
So
I don't know where it is.
So according to this this story, the this council member kind of precipitated a controversy by so the city council denied a request from Someone Cares for $20,000 in federal grant money, and I guess they cut off $10,000 for you, and also and has that, have they maintained that position? Are they still?
Yes.
And has there been further hostility from the city council?
No, they just cut off $10,000. We was getting $15,000, and they cut off $10,000.
So you got $5,000.
So we got $5,000. So we will get $5,000 next year.
I see. And the reason for this is because of complaints that some of your patrons, some of the homeless and poor who use your food services, have been littering and loitering, and then later getting drunk. That's the allegation.
The thing of it is, we're open from 1 to 4. We have a security. It's very quiet and very orderly. But in the evening, we don't really feel like we're responsible for these people. What they do at night. And as far as us bringing them into the neighborhood, they're already here. There's no place for them to go. Plus, we don't serve that many troublemakers they're talking about. Ours are the homeless, hungry people that are on minimum wage. They have to pay the rent, so they don't have money to buy food. We have families, the working poor, is what we get.
How many homeless people would you estimate there are in Costa Mesa?
Oh, I would have no idea. But I would think we're serving the biggest part of them.
How big is Costa Mesa? About 5,000 people? Or?
I don't know, just you know how big Costa Mesa is, how many?
She doesn't
know either.
The article says that Costa Mesa is has 5,000 people bounded by Newport Boulevard in the east and Monrovia Avenue in the west.
I would think they would know what they were talking about.
Yeah, it's a neighborhood we're talking about in Costa Mesa, I think. How has I also read in this article that many of your neighbors are quite laudatory. They praise the kitchen. They say they haven't seen any problems.
Right.
And there's a tendency in many American cities to simply want to drive homeless people away because they don't have much money and they're afraid that it'll bother the tourists.
We don't have tourists.
Right. So that's not really the issue in Costa Mesa, right?
No.
The issue is there a behavioral problem, do you think, late at night for folks in Costa Mesa with, I don't know, poor people buying liquor or littering or anything, or is that...
I really don't think so. We have people on the council who are against everything. And they're the ones that
have pushed this measure?
Yeah.
What's the situation for homeless people who try to sleep at night? Is it legal to sleep in Costa Mesa at night, let's say, outside?
No.
And is that strictly enforced by police, and are homeless people likely to be arrested if they're found sleeping?
It all depends on the policeman, if he doesn't like homeless. And it also would have something to do with their actions. You know, but I don't think there are that many. When we went to talk about this, they said, I think in the article, that there was a lot of arrests and all this kind of stuff. The police had no record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they insisted that we make ID cards, and if they were picked up, why, they would punch the card
Mm-hmm.
And if it was punched so many times, then we didn't serve them anymore.
And did you
a whole bunch of stuff. This has been going on now since the articles.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't received a card back from the police.
Wow. And so you agreed to this ID card program?
We've made them up. We made almost 500 of them.
And do you think this was a police-initiated program to kind of cut your funding, or do you know whether the real...
I don't think the police had anything to do with it.
You think it was the city council? Maybe it was this new kind of against everything city council, as you phrase it?
Well, I mean, they're the ones that are doing it.
Yep.
That's to be them.
Right.
But just to show you that there are people who appreciate what we're doing, Merle was elected daily point of light in Washington, D.C. Her day is July 9th.
Oh, congratulations.
And she will be getting a certificate signed by Clinton Bush, and it will be on the website.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, some people appreciate what she's doing.
Well, I imagine the people who eat at your kitchen certainly appreciate
they
it.
They certainly do.
And it sounds like you appreciate it as
I
well.
I do.
What do the local churches have to say about this? Were they neutral? Did they
support? There hasn't been any comment from them.
So they haven't been supportive, eh?
Well, they haven't been not supportive either.
They have neither been critical nor supportive.
They just have stayed out of it.
Do they, are you yours the only feeding program in the area, or are there others?
Yes, ours is the only one in Costa Mesa.
Wow. Has there been some, like, a new real estate redevelopment going on in Costa Mesa, some gentrification program, you know, something like that has been happening at the same time?
No.
Nothing like that. I know attempt to pretty up the city and get rid of the homeless folks.
No.
So this just kind of came as a bolt out of the blue, you know?
Yes, because she's been doing it for, like I say, 12 years. And, but, like I also told you, nobody wants it in their backyard.
Are these mostly, and you've been there for 5 years, Lee, the same people, or is it a largely a changing group?
No, it's a lot of the same people.
And are these folks homeless because of difficult job situation and housing, or do you think that they have intractable personal problems?
I think most of it is just no work.
Most of it is no work.
I really think if the city would put more time in employment, finding something for these people to do, there would be less people for us to feed.
Has anyone spoken out, like has the local media spoken out in favor of your of what you're doing? Or have they taken a stand? Well, what's their stand been?
Well, you read in the article what some people think.
Right.
The rest of them don't say anything.
Good. It sounds like a hard row to hoe there.
Yes. You have to be dedicated.
Now, according to this, Bill Turpitt, head of Families Costa Mesa, did support you. And owner Steve Simmons of the Rio's Jewelry and Loans said he hadn't experienced any problems. So there were some folks who said that they had no problem with what you were doing.
I couldn't answer that.
Yeah, that's what that is what the article says. Wow. What has been the support from people who, and you get a lot of your funding from private contributions?
We get all of our funding from private contributions. And we get donations from grocery stores. And we have people, this is strictly a volunteer.
Mm-hmm. How many people volunteer to keep your service running?
Oh, I'd say, there's probably 8 in the afternoon and that many in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
There are only 3 paid people that run this.
And this, you're part of a larger community center, the Rio Community Center, is that right?
We are strictly a soup kitchen.
Uh-huh. Because I was a little confused about that from the article. It said something about that you were a larger center that was there or something. You opened in 1986 at the Rio Community Center?
Yes. Yes.
And that's just the location where you're at.
Right. And where we're at now is where we're going to stay.
Mm-hmm. And so our landlord has no problem with you, and you don't expect difficulties in that from that score, and you expect things will be going along well there.
I imagine we'll be here for a long time.
And if folks want to contribute to the Someone Cares program, how can they reach you? What is your address?
Our mailing address is the Post Office Box, 11267.
11267? That's in Costa Mesa, California?
Right, 92627.
Give me that zip one more time.
92627.
92627. So again, that's Someone Cares, Post Office Box 11267, Costa Mesa, 92627. Wow. Well, I really wish you luck, and I do appreciate your giving us this interview.
Okay.
Which we'll use for a Street Spirit newspaper and...
And Free Radio Santa Cruz. You were listening to Lee of Someone Cares Soup Kitchen in Costa Mesa. Boy, it's really strange how cities try to starve out the homeless based on the notion that somehow if you don't provide food, they will... all wither and disappear. I guess it's based on a... I guess there's a sound theory there in some sense. Cruel, but sound. They're trying the same thing in San Jose, and they were trying it in San Francisco, going after food, not bombs, when they arrested hundreds of us in the last 8 years, trying to stop us from feeding in public places. They also tried to end St. Anthony's Soup Kitchen in Marin County in San Rafael, which is one of the best soup kitchens, I would say the best in the West Coast. And in response, the community rallied and told them to take a flying leap. And as a consequence, they've reached a deal nearby where the soup kitchen will move, but it won't move to the outskirts of town. It won't move 3 miles down the road into some little obscure area. Rather, it will move one block, and they will continue to serve good food to homeless people in San Rafael. It happened, of course, in Santa Cruz as well. Back in the late 80s, we fought our own battle around that when SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, served food at the town clock, and dozens of us were arrested, and two of us were convicted, Sandra Loringer and Brian Flanagan Staley. Here's a song which Mark Levy wrote about that whole situation based on George Bush's 1,000 Points of Light. You may remember that. President Bush talked about you don't need public money, you just need private charities, 1,000 Points of Light. This song is now called 999 Points of Light.
30 days in the county jail. Hold my cause. Hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. I have a shop on a street in town where hungry folks walk up and down. Some have no homes, some sick from want. I went, got some food from a restaurant. I took it to a central spot to feed the weary something hot. The police came, took me away. Now for my awful deed, I've gotta pay with 30 days in county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. They said I needed a permit to serve free food. It must be fit. Here I am on the garbage pile. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. I faced the judge and I made my plea. He looked away when he sentenced me. He said, we won't put you in that hole if you promise not to feed another living soul. I told that judge I could not say that crazy law I would obey, nor pay no fine or post no bail. Now I'm feeding folks inside the county jail. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Now Ollie North, he lied under oath, lied to the judge and the Congress both. He was running drugs for the Contra War, but they locked me up because I fed the poor. Our leader George, you know he might be right when he sees 1,000 points of light with a kinder, gentler hearts like mine. Now there's just 999. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. That was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time.
Mark Levy, 999 points of light from his album Shiro's Heroes. You can actually get that album. Give a call to 423-HUFF and I'll put you on to Mark, who lives up in the Big Basin area. Still puts out these wonderful satirical songs on tape, record, and CD. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norse, with you every Sunday from 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. So we're kind of rolling into the last part of the show. That last song was about folks who were serving free food, actually about one woman, an antique dealer named Sandria Loringer, who was with a bunch of homeless advocates, myself included, who were fighting to stop violence against the homeless by having a vigil at the town clock and also feeding the homeless there, encouraging the city to start some feeding programs, which eventually, many, many months later, after tens of thousands of dollars in trials and so forth, they did. Mayor Marty Wormhout, to her eternal shame, was mayor at that time and was determined to make sure that we didn't feed people food at the town clock. Her police force showed up in riot gear to have us arrested. And she's never apologized for that and never said she thought any better of it. I hope someday she does. Food Not Bombs is still serving in Santa Cruz. It serves every Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock at the town clock. And you can actually probably get down there now and get some food if you're hungry, if you happen to be within range. They got good food, they got healthy food, and if you want to volunteer to help them, you can give them a call at 425-3345, 425-3345, and they also serve on Wednesdays and Thursdays at 4 o'clock, also at the town clock. Good food, good people, good for all of us. Feed the People, an organization that used to feed downtown and was run by folks like Sean Alimi, Shit Kicker Sean, as I used to call him, or The Bitch, as he used to call himself, is still around. It's not serving publicly, but it's getting food donations out to folks who need it. If you want to get in touch with Feed the People, you can call 425-3333 or 425-FEED, F-E-E-D. Again, 425-FEED for Feed the People and 425-3345 for Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz. This is also the weekend of a festival up in San Francisco that Food Not Bombs is throwing, a gathering. So I'm going to play you the message they have on their machine up in San Francisco that talks about it in case any folks want to go up there to the festival or the workshops. Bear in mind that some of these workshops have already happened because I guess the festival runs from the 10th to the 14th, but you'll catch some of it.
San Francisco Food Not Bombs. We are a nonviolent, non-hierarchical organization dedicated to social change. We serve dinner 7 days a week at approximately 6:30, sometimes we're a bit late, at the UN Plaza. That's on Market Street between 7th and 8th Street. Lunch is served on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. at Hayden's Canyon and also at 16th and Valencia. The Food Not Bombs Western Regional Gathering is coming up July 10th through the 14th. The events are as follows. There will be workshops the 10th through the 12th, and discussions in San Francisco, and then the 13th, things will continue over in the East Bay. On Saturday, the 11th, there will be an anarchist cafe at 225 Petrero at 16th Street from 6 to 10 p.m. On Tuesday, the 14th, there will be an action at the UN Plaza at 7th and Market to reclaim public space and demand economic human rights. That evening, there will be a Food Not Bombs video night at ATA. Donations or correspondence for Food Not Bombs can be sent to P.O. Box 40484, San Francisco, California 94140. So leave a message, press the pound button at any time to bypass the rest of this message. Food Not Bombs weekly meetings are held at the Epicenter Zone at 475 Valencia by 16th Street every Thursday at 8 p.m. Solidarity for the week is as follows. There's an Animal Rights Direct Action Coalition meeting at 7 p.m. at the ACT UP space. That's at 3991 17th Street, right at the corner of Castro and Market and 17th. The next day, there's a hot cookie demonstration. Folks are meeting at the ACT UP space at 4 p.m. On Monday, there's an ACT UP meeting at the ACT UP space at 7:30. For further information, you can call 415-864-6686. Long-term solidarity is as follows. There's the Berkeley Wobblies have been picketing outside the Berkeley YMCA. For further information, call the Wobblies at 510-845-0540. The Livermore Conversion Project will be putting on a Hiroshima Day demonstration at Livermore Labs on August 6th at 8 p.m. For further information, you can call Ed at 510-444-8693. There is also the possibility for a Nagasaki Day rally outside of the federal building. That would be on Sunday, August 9th. Thanks. Bye-bye.
And that was the Food Not Bombs San Francisco message line. And in case you want to reach them, I think I even have their number around here somewhere. Let me take a second look. Yeah, well, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I will give you that number anytime after 1:30 if you're interested. Or you can also call Food Not Bombs locally at 425-3345. Actually, I think it's 985-7087 in San Francisco. 985-7087 in area code 650. Today, of course, our area code changes as well, but that's another story. Here's a story from the San Francisco Examiner. Poverty grips 30% of kids in California by Laura Meckler, AP. Number of poor children in state, nation rising. Washington. More than 950,000 California children under six, nearly 30% of the state's kids, are living in poverty, a new study shows. The study released Thursday by the National Center for Children in Poverty at Columbia University gave state-by-state comparisons for child poverty for the periods 1992 through 1996 and 1979 through 1983. California has seen an increase of almost 25%, from 516,759 children to 950,269 in that time. With increases of more than 20% in California, Texas, and New York, where almost half the poor children live, the national average was pushed up by 12% despite significant drops in other areas. Nationally, nearly one in four preschoolers lived in poverty in the mid-1990s. But the poverty rates varied widely across the country. 4 in 10 young Louisiana children lived in poverty, but just over 1 in 10 in New Hampshire and Utah did. Every region has states with sharp increases and significant drops in the number of impoverished children, the study shows. In Connecticut, for example, the rate jumped 62%, bringing the affluent state close to the national average. Its New England neighbor, Vermont, saw a drop of 39%, giving it one of the lowest child poverty rates in the country. I expected to see variation, but not as dramatic variation as we found, said Neil Bennett, co-author of the study. A fourfold difference between states is a stunning difference to be reckoned. Causes were unclear, Bennett said, although some of the difference can be attributed to changes in the number of mothers who finished high school, the proportion of young children with single moms, and the portion with at least one parent working full-time. In 1996, 5.5 million children under six were living in poverty, down from the peak in 1993, but still much higher than it was in the early 1980s when there was 4.4 million. In 1996, the official poverty line for a family of four was $16,036 a year for a three-person family. For a family of three, $12,516. But nearly half the young children in poverty were in families earning less than half that. In the typical state, about 30% of the change can be attributed to mothers' education, the proportion of single mothers and working parents, Bennett said. In Connecticut, there was a 13% drop in the number of children who had a parent working full-time. But the rate of children with a parent working full-time jumped 48% in Alaska, which saw a 23% drop in the poverty rate of young children. Connecticut officials suggest the state has too few poor children to create a statistically significant sample size. Its economy took longer than many states to recover from the recession in the early 1990s, but that's true for Massachusetts as well, which had a much smaller increase in child poverty, said Kevin Loveland, director of family services in Connecticut. Sounds like Connecticut's getting a little sensitive. Poverty grips 30% of the kids in California. Poverty is up 30% among kids under six, from 550,000 in the late 70s to 900,000 plus in the late 90s here in Santa Cruz, or I should say in California. It should be pointed out that all these figures predate the welfare decapitation, the National Welfare Destruction Plan, so we can expect these figures to rise significantly. That's from the San Francisco Examiner yesterday, I believe. We don't have much time left. We often follow the issues around medical marijuana, and we're going to interview attorney Kate Wells when our phones went kaplink. So we hope that on Thursday when we return at 6 in the evening for our next show, we'll be able to do an interview with Kate Wells, who has been following the medical marijuana situation, joined the team to defend the San Jose medical marijuana activist Peter Baez, cousin of singer Joan Baez, who it looks like he's got a shitload of charges heaped on him for doing very, very little. In essence, simply trying to keep the marijuana club open. In Monterey, there's a rather nasty story that showed up in the June 9th issue of the Monterey County Peninsula Herald, which we'll try to follow up on, too. It's Monterey wants to ban pot clinics. We'll discuss ordinance at meeting. And that was, of course, over a month ago, and the story read like this. Monterey, the scene last October, a well-publicized sheriff's department shutdown of a medical marijuana clinic, is moving to permanently ban such clinics from the city. The Planning Commission will hold a preliminary study of such a ban at 7 p.m. meeting today, June 9th, actually. On June 23rd, the commission should have the wording of an ordinance drafted by city staff. To take effect, the ordinance will need city council approval. William Connor, city attorney, said a state appeals court ruling has made clear that even if Proposition 215, approved by California's voters in November 1996, allows patients to use marijuana under doctor's orders, it does not permit others to grow, dispense, or sell the drug. It's illegal for a medical marijuana club to exist even in San Francisco, he said, and so forth and so on. So we've heard all this before. Shortly after Proposition 215 was enacted, Monterey, Pacific Grove, Salinas, and other cities began receiving requests for permits to operate marijuana clinics. In May of 97, the Monterey City Council slapped an emergency moratorium on such clinics, saying the city needed time to hash out permanent regulations. OU AIDS patients, hang on for the next few years while we hash out our regulations. Connor said that because courts have made it clear that cities cannot permit medical marijuana facilities, Monterey should enact an outright ban. And the way we choose to go about it is to put in zoning ordinance as a use that is not allowed in any of the city's zones. No requests for permits have come in recently. Monterey's only experience with a medical marijuana facility came in October when the sheriff's department closed a clinic that was operating without a city approval in an upstairs office at Alvarado Street and Del Monte Avenue. George Norlock, a member of the clinic's board of directors and a cancer patient himself, said Monday there aren't enough patients in Monterey County who have marijuana recommendations from their doctors to make a clinic viable. There's a small population, and it's hard to reach, he said. And anyway, Norlock said when he voted for Proposition 215 himself, he didn't envision that the drug would be distributed through clinics or clubs. I thought it would be handled like every other classified drug dispensed with a prescription, so it could be regulated. Norlock, 32, was diagnosed with testicular cancer at age 26. He has had major surgery and is scheduled for further surgery at Stanford Medical Center. He's also undergone chemotherapy and says...